Did you just out-nerd me?
Yeah, I think I did. It's March 6, 2024, and this is Rare Encounter, encounter number 180. And turning 180 degrees and walking away, I'm Abel Kirby.
And without a self-intro line for tonight, I'm Cold Acid.
Did I steal yours?
No.
Oh, just checking. I thought I might.
No, I just didn't get one prepared. I just didn't get one prepared, and I thought I would turn that into its own self-introduction.
Aha. Uh-huh.
You know, I'm... Yeah. Like how you turned 180 degrees, I did a 180 on my self-intro, or lack thereof.
Man, I've been...
Because I'm clever like that.
There's a lot of things going on right now, and I have to complain about one thing right off the bat. I've been listening to Marty Bent on Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard that show?
I've heard of Tales from the Crypt, the old TV show.
Well, it's Tales from the Crypt as in crypto, and he's discussing Bitcoin. Anyway, I was listening to that today. He has a guest on, and every other thing the guest says, there's some bell that rings in the background, and it's absolutely infuriating. It's like a jingle jangle going on in the back of your podcast all the time. It's like that, but if everything I said was punctuated by a ringy ring, it would be...
Oh, like an old-timey phone?
It is absolutely maddening. Like, and Marty's losing it, I think. I don't know why he didn't stop the show and get this guy to shut the hell up. Whatever it was terrible. I couldn't listen to a thing he was saying because all I heard was the bell. Anyway, that's all I have.
Okay.
So get it together, Marty. I think it might have been a bird, though.
Get it together, Marty.
I think it might have been a bird, though. I didn't watch the video, and it's just because...
Ceiling bird?
Both. I think there was a ceiling bird and an actual bird ringing a bell. Because there was a tweet, and then there was, like, some chirpy, squawky stuff. You know, birds, when they're not quite singing, they just kind of like that lame kind of sound that they make. If you're around birds,
choo,
you hear
choo,
that.
Choo, choo.
Like a big home bird.
Yeah. Now, keep in mind, of course, birds aren't real.
Yeah.
So maybe that wasn't what you were hearing. You were hearing the government drones.
Can someone explain the birds aren't real mythos to me? Because I really, other than the phrase birds aren't real... And one other fact about how they recharge their batteries by landing on power lines. I'm not sure I know anything about birds aren't real.
If we explained it, it wouldn't be funny anymore.
Well, I'm going to counter that by saying it isn't funny, and it wasn't funny for years now.
Oh, fine. Okay, so birds aren't real is a meme about how there are no real such things as birds. What you're seeing are actually little government drones spying on you.
Now, I took it as a meme that says there really aren't conspiracies, just kind of ridiculous things people say for fun. And I always thought there was a counter-op kind of thing to it, like, hey, if we could get these people to they just want something to believe.
No,
give them anything,
like,
right?
It's like modern flat earthers, mm-hmm. right? Nobody who's saying the earth is flat and things like that actually believe it. But they're saying it because it drives other people crazy.
Yeah, I can see some of that, I guess. I've been driven crazy by things like that before.
It's all about trolling people and confusing the media.
Mm-hmm. All right, I can get behind that. Let's see. What about the people on YouTube who claim to be Jesus? Is that also trolling the media, or are they actually insane the way they appear?
They're schizos.
Okay, just checking.
Just like VTubers.
Oh, the VTubers. You've been in the
now,
degeneracy,
I've got,
huh?
I've got more VTuber stuff, but yeah, what the fuck? Let's start with that, and then I'll go on to the Fungus Among Us.
Let's do it. VTube me up, dude.
Apparently things are looking worse and worse for Niji Sanji. One of their contracts leaked, and have you heard of Legal Mindset? This dude, he's a law tuber, right? So he does these videos on YouTube about court cases and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He did a 4-hour stream going over this contract and just like how like this contract would never be enforceable in the States. And from what I've seen, yeah, it wouldn't be enforceable pretty much anywhere in the Western Hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to wonder, like, what sort of assholes do they have for lawyers over in Japan?
Yeah, it's a weird culture when it comes to the, because you're familiar with the idol scandals, right? Before you, before VTubers, we had idols in weird contracts and where they couldn't have a boyfriend, for example, like extra control-y stuff. And for some reason that passed muster back then. So I don't know.
But that's a bit different because that was simply the focus on like the public persona of the idol. This is some crazy shit. Like, Niji Sanji may compel the liver to purchase anything the company considers required to do the work, but will only reimburse up to $1,333 USD or 200,000 yen.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
It's like, kind of open-ended.
This is supposed to be your employer. Yeah, it's totally open-ended. So they can essentially drive you into bankruptcy. And if you do anything about it, you're breaking contract. They take a 50% cut of anything taken after, like, YouTube, Twitch, or Apple, right? Any income that the liver makes has to go through Niji.
Now, that's a better deal than some of the cam girls. A lot of the cam girls are getting 60-40, and they're getting the 40 when they have agents, just so you know.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure that most of these agencies are, like, 60-40 in favor of the livers. Livers are under an obligation to cooperate, including attending meetings, etc. Okay, that doesn't sound too bad, but it also means that if the company wants to force them to do particular streams, they have to do them, right? So things like the Black video where three of their English livers went and said, and like pretty much self-reported themselves as the bullies, right? Livers must procure materials under their own cost and responsibility. They may not be used for any purpose, be altered, reproduced, or transferred, but still belongs to Niji Sanji. So in other words, you have to spend your own money that you might not get reimbursed for at all. And even if you do, probably nowhere near what you're actually paying for it. And it all belongs to the company, not you, anyways.
I'd like to see an expense report for Niji Sanji. Like a fully processed, you know, here, I'm a VTuber, here's my expense, I had to buy this stuff, here's my receipts, and I want to know what the form looks like and what the vetting and processing is before, up to the check being cut back to them for reimbursement.
So last year,
fascinating.
Doki Bird, when she was still Selene Tatsuki for Niji Sanji English, she made about $200,000 US, almost all of which she had to use to pay out of pocket for pretty much everything that she did through the year. And all of which ends up being owned by Niji Sanji instead of her. So, she netted nothing, right?
Mm-hmm. You don't, and when she left, they wanted her to mail out her studio back to them, I presume.
It says here, yeah, once the contract end, livers need to return everything they used in their work. Seems to be written to include any of their personal property they use, if any.
Yeah, that sounds kind of ridiculous. Yeah,
a lot of this, would not, like, you wouldn't even need a lawyer. You just, like, go in front of a judge and say, like, look at these terms. None of this is fair. There is none of the concept, like, in Western contract law where a contract has to be, like between equal parties, right? This is essentially, like, you're signing yourself into slavery.
Mm-hmm. But, if it gets to a judge, that's one thing. But in the meantime, you can probably compel kind of idiots to do what the contract says, even if there's no reason for them to actually follow it. Right.
Now, here's another fun thing. Niji Sanji may amend the contract and the liver is assumed to have agreed if they don't object in 14 days or if they do anything in their VTuber persona. On the same leg, Niji Sanji dictates all the communication that they can do, so it could be argued, change the contract, right, on the liver, force them to send a Twitter message as their VTuber personality, and from that say, oh yeah, you've agreed to the change of the contract, whether or not they even saw what the changes are yet.
Yeah.
This is the fucking mob. The goddamn fucking mafia isn't as bad as Niji Sanji.
Yeah, none of that sounds like it's even remotely enforced. Like, it's just strange credulity for anyone to look at it and say, oh yeah, you know, we force you to post that you agree with the contract and that we take that as the agreement, right? That's at worst, it's not their speech, right?
Meanwhile, it's like fucking Niji Sanji's like fucking Darth Vader in The Empire Strikes Back, right? We have changed the terms.
We've changed the end user license agreement. Pray we don't change it farther. Doesn't quite roll off the tongue.
Yeah, it's like these guys are fucking evil.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's just one of many companies who don't really respect their employees.
Yeah, these guys are absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
So in other news, apparently, like, they're not just like evil, they're also incompetent, as was seen with a recent announcement about Ofkai Expo, this VTuber convention that happens in California. They had three English Niji talents that were going to attend, and then just recently announced that no, they're not going to be attending, and anybody who's upset by this, well, we are offering refunds to the end of the month if you decide you're not going to come now. The thing is, this apparently had been agreed on with Niji Sanji 2 weeks ago, and they only just got the go-ahead to make the official announcement from Niji just as this latest shit was coming to light.
Mm.
So yeah, they must have the most incompetent fucking comms PR team there at Anycolor, the company that actually runs the VTuber agency, right? Like, how, like, it boggles the fucking mind, man. It just boggles the fucking mind.
Well, you know, the good news is that these people are going to get out of these contracts because it's public now. They're going to go off and do their own thing and make more money somewhere else.
Yeah, anyone who's worth anything. Some of them, right? I mean, are already out, right? Like Sayu Synchronicity, who used to be Zion, and now Doki Bird, right? Here's another thing. Yeah, the other thing that just dropped recently was that Zayon was given 3 hours to sign like what was essentially a shut your mouth agreement that they were trying to force on her. When she didn't, after the 3 hours, they said, okay, we'll give you another 3 hours. And when she showed it to her lawyer during the second 3 hour period, they're like, their lawyer was like, yeah, no, don't bother. This is just bullshit to further NDA you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So yeah, it's like these fuckers need some serious sunlight on them. Like these people are just absolutely horrible. And I hope that the people who aren't part of the Friends with Management bullying clique get the fuck out of there as soon as they can.
Hmm. Well, VTubers aside, there's been some action going down in the places that are supposed to be fun. I saw.
I mean, we got Gamergate 2 starting up.
Yeah, I saw something about that. Was that some relationship to the original Gamergate in terms of someone's husband or something? Someone's boyfriend?
The whole Stink Bully Incorporated thing.
Yeah,
I got some stuff for that, but I don't want to touch it right now. I want to bring out something a little more fun before I get like too angry.
Well, I got something fun. Do you want to talk about Donutgate?
Donutgate?
Donutgate. Did you see that in my notes? I put the link to Donutgate.
Yeah, I did. I did.
I got the story from dig.com, where all the good stories come. Also, my story source of last resort, typically. But dig.com has a nice rundown on... I'll read the headline. Local vegan community is distraught after learning their donuts had been coming from Dunkin'. Okay.
Oh, no. So, and you just know that those are not vegan at all, what you get from Dunkin' Donuts. Like, they got to be frying those in, like, pork fat or something.
No, this is the story of a vegan snack shop that doesn't make their own donuts, but instead they pay some other vegan bakery, so-called vegan bakery, to provide donuts, and then they... turns out, don't make their own donuts, and they keep, and somewhere down the line, it's like one guy at the end who's just buying 2 dozen donuts from Dunkin', you know, every week or every day, and selling them back to the vegan community for a $2 markup or something, you know, per donut. And so it's like, hidden in all the middlemen is the fact that there's no one who's actually making a vegan donut, and I suspect if they could, no one would want to eat it.
It's very true.
Probably people going to Cindy's Snacks all the time. Wow, their donuts are so good. They taste so great. And can you believe they're not vegan? Or that they are?
Can you believe they're vegan and they don't have any gluten in them?
Yep. It turns out they're fried in fat and possibly animal fat. And they have all kinds of non-vegan stuff going around. Do you know what gave it away?
The fact that they have like the little frosting D's all over them.
It was the sprinkles. Yeah, they had Dunkin' Donuts novelty sprinkles on one of the donuts, and someone noticed, hey, wait a minute, those are the Dunkin' Donuts sprinkles. And they tracked it down and realized that was what was going on eventually. So, of course, the culprits, which apparently is another vegan bakery, I'm trying to find the name of it, but the guys who were at fault said, we don't know anything about this. We always make all our donuts. Like they've been actually, just totally denying it, pretending that no one could tell that, oh, it's Savory Fig is the name of the name of the company. Savory Fig says, oh, we don't know anything about this. It's not true. Right. And it's just one of those absolutely ridiculous denials. They just sort of pretend you won't notice that they're at fault. Oh, well.
Yeah.
So there's your donut gate rundown. This was hitting the Philadelphia Inquirer, actually, is probably the better story.
Yeah,
that's what you posted in chat.
Yeah, because that's where the dig article is actually coming from.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's the little D sprinkles, Dunkin' Donut sprinkles. By the way,
D's nuts.
They're not called Dunkin' Donuts anyway anymore. By the way, they're called Dunkin'.
Just Dunkin's.
There are some Dunkin' Donuts too. So around here, I've seen both Dunkin' and Dunkin' Donuts. They haven't all made the swap yet.
Some stores, the ones that still say Dunkin' Donuts, are probably not company stores, but franchise locations, and the owners haven't bothered actually doing the updating of the branding.
Yeah, in fact, they'll probably make more money by not updating the branding if they hold on long enough.
Yeah.
They get that loyalty thing going.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to change to just Dunkin' anyways.
Yeah. Well, I had kind of a main topic I wanted to sprinkle in, and it has to do with...
I see what you did there.
I have a it's actually the trigonometry one.
Ooh.
Seeing how we're 180, you know, and we've got 180 degrees and walking away, I was trying to think of a good way we could talk about trigonometry on the show. I still haven't found one yet. The closest I got was, what if we listed a bunch of trig functions and just described what they were? But I think maybe something...
You're looking at going on an arctangent.
I want to cut out the arctangent and just go take that secant line right in the middle, right between the two points. On the curve. All right, okay.
We're I think they're getting annoyed with us in chat with these terrible puns.
Yeah, but I want to check in with you. What's your level of comfort with trigonometry?
I am a sinner.
A sinner. But really, no, they teach trigonometry in some primary school, or what place in the Canadian education system would you learn something, some skills like trigonometry?
Usually high school or college.
Okay. And what kind of level of detail do they go into? I'm curious. Like, what's the method of teaching? Is it just another math class, or is it part of some other thing? Is it really a trigonometry class?
It would be part of the math class in a high school setting. And in a college setting, it would be part of a structured math class for the course that you're taking, right? Like the program that you're in.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen it.
So when I was in college, right, we had trig was part of it, general pre-calc, and some light entry into calculus itself, and finite maths.
I've seen it in kind of high school material as part of an algebra trig combined course, and that's the textbook that I initially learned from. And then it's all like ever present if you do a pre-calc course. I actually saw a real just pure trigonometry course when I started college. There was one there. I actually took it. It was I think I was 15 at the time too. So, or maybe I was 16 by then. So that's where I actually learned trigonometry, was in a college, but I was kind of going as a, you know, high school age kid. But ultimately, you kind of learn how to solve some of these different problems with it. But I never really learned trigonometry until I studied calculus later. Because when you get into calculus, you have to relearn all of that shit with a lot more detail. Because now you're looking at, you know, the integral, you're using derivatives of trig functions and stuff as u substitutions.
Yeah, whereas in high school, they're like, oh yeah, there's these trigonometry functions. They'll probably be useful for some things as you're going through more advanced geometry, but we're not going to break down how they work and why,
yep.
which is like when I was in the college course, we did get that breakdown.
Still, even in the college courses, you are either dealing with exact values or trying to do approximations. And one of the things that continually comes up, actually at work sometimes, is how do you actually compute the sine or cosine or tangent of an angle? And so I was just going to wax philosophically a little bit on this for a second, if you'll forgive me for that, if you'll all indulge me. that there's a couple of kind of key things. First is all of these different trig functions you can always write in terms of sine and cosine, right? So
yeah,
really, if you can evaluate sine and cosine, you can always form tan, right? You can always form cotan and all the other formulations. You can always, yeah, you can write it in terms of sine and cosine. So if you want to evaluate any trig function, what you really have to know is how to evaluate sine and cosine, and there's a way to get there. Then, you know, you take the next step and you realize, well, sine and cosine, if you make a chart of them, you find out they're actually really the same shape. You know, they have this wave looking thing and it goes off in one,
it's one just edge forever. Off by 180 degrees.
It's 90 degrees.
90 degrees.
It's off by 90 degrees. And so what it turns out is you can write a identity that says, oh, you know, if I know sine, I can always find out what the cosine value is, right? If I know how to evaluate sine and you ask me what the cosine of this number is, I have a way to do that, because there's a way to move between sines and cosines perfectly. And now you get down to the fact that all of the trigonometry functions that I might have to evaluate are actually, if I could describe sine, you know, punch in a number and find the sine of that number, I could always evaluate any trig function, right? So I'm down to one that's important. And then I'm going down my rabbit hole.
Okay.
So, and then I just one or two more points of symmetry, which is, yeah, okay, well, the first half of sine, the sine wave, is actually the same as the second half if you're looking at at cycles, right? The first half cycle is the same as the second half cycle, except it's upside down compared, right? So there's, it's just one's the negative of the other. And so actually I only have to compute half of, you know, sine between the value of zero and pi, right? And if I can do that, I can find, because it's periodic, I could find the value for any number. All I really have to do is evaluate that. And then if you keep going, you find out actually the little shape of that, those little humps, right? So if the sine wave, I have a kind of like a hump that goes above, it goes positive for a while. There's a maximum that goes down. It crosses the zero again. It goes negative for a while and it comes back up. If you look at the shape of one of those humps, it's actually only half of it has any meaning. Everything else is sort of a mirrored, repeated version of this one little section of the curve. And so you only really have to know how to compute sine for between zero and pi over two. And then you can make sine for any value by doing different mirroring and inversions. And then you can compute any value for cosine using some set of relationships. And from there, you can compute any kind of tangent or cotangent or secant, cosecant, or the primary, the modern trigonometric functions. There are some old trigonometric functions that aren't as familiar.
So I'm thinking from this, like, I'm starting to think about how, like, for 8-bit computers and a lot of the earlier modern day computers, when they're running on like 8088s and shit, why there is always lookup tables for the trigonometry functions, right? And how they were able to fit those in such small bits of RAM is because they could do those sort of tricks, eh?
Yeah. So yeah, if you're gonna store a lookup table, you don't have to store a lookup table for every value of sine, right? You only have to store between zero and pi over two, and then everything else is a inversion or mirroring of that data. And if you know how to index into it cleverly, then you're there. But what you just mentioned, that the process of going from some art, like I want to take the sine of 2,000 radians, for example. Well, I can get there by making constructions of, pi over two radians, right? I just keep building my sine wave out until I get to 2,000. That could take a long time. So what I really want to do is a process called range reduction, where I say, well, you know, I've got to get my the value 2,000 radians and then just keep dividing, subtracting pi, 2 pi from it to bring it one cycle in until I get to, you know, a cycle that's close to zero. And that was the problem with one of the floating point processors. I think we covered this on the show, like, or we talked about it once. One of the early floating point coprocessors that had a trigonometry error in the math built in, where if you started doing, you ask it to compute sine of certain numbers, it would kind of give you the right answer. But if you go out to a few decimal places, it'd be totally off. And you're expecting, you know, I'm getting asked my computer what the value of sine of, you know, 90 radians is. And I'm expecting to get the exact answer, and it doesn't. It only gives you a few decimal places of precision. And that all came from the range.
I mean, you only get a few decimals of resolution anyways with your average floating point processor, right? Because they only do, like, at least used to, up to 80-bit, right?
Right, and that wasn't enough, though. That was the thing. The way the floating-point coprocessor worked, if you're doing single precision, right, your numbers that you're dealing with are 16-bit. But you don't want to do the math at 16-bit, so they actually did is they...
No, single precision is 32-bit. Double is 64. Extended double, like what the 87 coprocessors did, is 80. Quad is 128 bits. Trust me on this.
Well, on some hardware systems, single precision can be, for example, on Arduino, I think single precision is actually 16-bit. So embedded applications, it can change.
If it's following the IEEE standard, 16-bit is half, and it is standard in the standard since
754
since 2008.
I'm looking at IEEE 754. I know what you're talking about. It may be an IEEE standard, but I've worked on stuff where that didn't hold. Anyway, regardless,
well, they can't properly call it single or double. Then
you can call it whatever you want. No one's going to shoot you. The
I will. I'll shoot them. Use the proper terms, fuckwads.
Yeah. Single and double. Yeah.
Meanwhile, somebody in the chat needs correction. Because it's apparent Spud the Mighty said you can express all the trig functions in terms of E. And that is incorrect. You can express them in terms of pi. It's logarithms that you can express in terms of E.
Oh, no, I'm going to correct your correction. Because there are formulations, you have to use a complex, you have to be willing to do complex math, but there is a formulation for all trig functions with an exponential form. So like cosine and sine, they're all the differences of two exponentials. So you have like e to the jx minus e to the minus jx over 2j is one, and there's e to the minus x. They're all formulations just like that. They're funny enough, they enable this property where you can take the sine of a complex number, or you take the sine of an imaginary number. It's actually the imaginary unit times the hyperbolic sine of the same number. It's kind of a funny property that falls out of Euler's law.
Did you just out nerd me?
Yeah, I think I did. Oh, I need a stomp on that. There we go. I'm doing trigonometry, man. So that's what enables a lot of the subspace signal classification algorithms like music, because what you end up searching for is, instead of looking like with a Fourier transform, Fourier technique kind of shit, you're looking for sinusoids present in a signal. But when you do, so if I say I'm looking for one, a signal in noise, right? I expect to find one sinusoid. Well, if you use like music and some of the super resolution algorithms, you do have to prime it and tell it how many signals exist in the noise so it knows, so it can try and classify them. And anyway, if you have one sine wave, you have to put, you're looking for two items with music, because in some of these algorithms, they don't count sine waves, they count exponentials. And since every sine wave is two exponentials, you say, oh, there's one signal out there, so I better have, I'm looking for two exponentials in the signal subspace. It's definitely something you can do, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah, I had to learn IEEE 754 for a numerical analysis class, and most of the class that I remember was, I never memorized the standard because that's not how I roll. It was given a certain number of exponent bits and a certain number of fraction bits, like what's the range that you could do? Because what you may have to do if you're doing hardware design is say, well, okay, all these nerds at IEEE think 754 standards are great, but what if I don't want 8 bits of exponent? Right? What if I want more bits of fraction because I know my data is conditioned in a way? And frankly, I'd be wasting space if I used a standard representation of floating point. What if I make a custom one that's better fit to the thing that I'm trying to describe? Then,
so like arbitrary precision floating point.
Yeah, like you don't have to have 8 bits of exponent. What if I know my data is bound and it's not going to go over 1,000, right? I don't need exponent bits that bring that represent values above 1,000 now, and I can trade those for more fraction bits and get better precision. Just as an example.
Makes sense.
And that was kind of the point of that course anyway. At least it was that, and then they taught you how to do cubic splines. And the main thing that I learned
did
from
you
that...
Did you reticulate them?
Did I what?
Did you reticulate them?
I didn't reticulate them. What's, is that a joke?
You didn't reticulate the splines?
I didn't reticulate a spline. All I learned was that don't use cubic splines for anything because they suck. Terrible. They're terrible to interpolate with. They give you the wrong answer more often than the right answer. That's my takeaway. But
and yet they were used for true type.
Yeah, maybe there's some aesthetic value to them. But if you're talking about, oh, I've got some samples and I want to know the value between two samples, don't put a cubic spline there. You get the wrong answer.
Yeah.
Use Shannon Nyquist.
They used something else for the Adobe fonts, like type 1, right?
Yeah.
But it was cubic for the TrueType font.
Yeah, there was a special curve type. I can't remember the name of it. But it was another, like, cubic splines, you're just describing sections of curves and controlling their endpoints and sort of the trajectory they when the cubic spline hits that endpoint, like what angle is it hitting the endpoint at too is important. So
yeah, the PostScript fonts. PostScript. Bezier curves.
Yes.
Oh, that's what it is. PostScript uses cubic Bezier curves, where TrueType uses quadratic curves.
Ah, quadratic curves.
So I had it totally wrong.
Good old quadratics, man. That was sort of the meme when it came to high school algebra, was the quadratic equation, and there'd be people trying to remember that stupid thing. Just for a test
conic
or something.
Conic sections, right?
Conic sections.
Yeah.
We called them conic sections.
But they're cones, so conic.
But we call them conics in the States. Very interesting. I've never heard it called conic. Yeah,
Well, maybe ellipses. They called it conic in here, too, but for me, because it's a cone, it should be conic.
Yeah, I guess that's... I mean, I understand your logic. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, but they've always been called conics, though, in my experience.
Weird.
Yeah, so you got your hyperbolas. Speaking of hyperbolic trig functions, yeah, your hyperbolas, ellipses.
Yep.
You can describe parabolas. Those a little bit. Circles,
ellipses for the tool fans, parabolas, and for people who go off, who go like right off, hyperbolas.
Hyperbolas, yep. Man, so much cool stuff with these curves. They're really fun to study, especially if you can get an application where they matter. Like if you're looking at, I think the height. So if you have a two telephone poles and you string a wire between them, you know the mass per unit length of the wire, and you know how high the poles is and how far apart is and what's the tension on it and everything, and you can figure out, I think hyperbolic, it's like either hyperbolic cosine or one of those comes into the equation that tells you what curve does the wire draw, you know, because it's not straight from the top of each pole, it kind of sags in the middle, so describe the sag exactly for all these parameters, and it's a pretty fun exercise.
Yeah,
get to use some of that stuff. We use
can we go from one thing a stem to another?
One thing a stem?
Yeah.
Oh sure. Where do you want to go?
Like we've done our math. Now we want to go into.
I have one caveat. We can go to another thing in stem, but we have to turn 180 degrees to get there.
Okay.
Okay.
So
that was my turning. Wait, that's my turning sound. Yeah. Okay. That's 180.
So I was mentioning there's a new fungus among us.
A fungus among us.
Yeah. And you know what? You know how you deal with this fungus? Walk without rhythm.
Walk without rhythm. You don't pee on your feet?
No.
Oh. What have I been doing?
Walk without rhythm and you won't attract the sandworm fungus.
Oh God! Is this a Dune thing?
Yeah. There's this recently discovered fungus that's been named after the sandworms. It's a Tulistoma shihaludi.
Oh God!
Yeah. But you that's know, good. It's not big like a sandworm. It's actually a very tiny little fungus.
Does it look like a sandworm?
It was discovered in Hungary.
Well, those sandworms are always hungry.
Oh yeah, they are.
Are you going to see the new Dune movie?
No, probably not.
Same here. I didn't see the first one. Not really interested in the second one.
I'm not... I mean, I'm interested in seeing the movies, but I'm not interested in going to a theater. And I'm too cheap to pay for streaming services, especially with my shitty internet connection.
I really liked Dune, okay? I love the books. We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
I liked the David Lynch movie.
I love the original books myself. And I think I've expressed before how I feel about the Brian Herbert books.
Herbert! The bullshit, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I watched the trailer for these movies and it turned me off. They looked cool, but then as soon as the actors started speaking, the dialogue was so ridiculously bad. Like, it was so cringeworthy that I couldn't even finish the trailer. I was like, okay, I'm done. I can't sit through this bullshit. Everyone sounds like a whiny bitch. Everyone, every yeah. single person. It's just unwatchable as far as I can tell. Oh, I see National anyway, Lampoon's Dune. D-O-O-N. Yeah. Yes.
Going back.
Nice.
Yeah. Going back to the fungus. So, yeah, this thing's like 3 to 7 centimeters in length and less than a centimeter wide. And apparently, the color of the gleba, which is the part of the interior of the cap that contains the spores, is a cinnamon brown, similar to the color of the spice
melange.
Yeah, they also named another species T. dunense, ostensibly after the dunes where they were found, but also might be a dune reference to the books. But the third species was just called T. hungaricum, named after the country.
Interesting.
Yeah. Apparently, this isn't the first life form to be named after the sandworm either. Last summer, a paleontologist at University of Kansas discovered a 500 million year old seaworm fossil and named it Schiehallidia shurikeni. So it's a shuriken worm.
That's fun.
Yeah. It also was tiny. Apparently, the extinct sea worm was about 7 to 8 centimeters long.
I'm looking for a, here's your National Post story, Eric. Yeah. Somehow I lost that. I wanted to look at the pictures of it. So, oh, that was just that's the fungus. Okay.
Yeah.
No other. I wanted
so yeah,
to see
I
worm.
Found that was definitely that's definitely the sort of news I like to bring onto our show.
That's good. Fungus among us.
Yeah.
And you
fungus
didn't,
among us.
You don't have to pee on your feet, guys. It's safe.
No peeing on the feet. Unless that's what you're into, in which case, gross.
That's what Crocs are for, right?
No! No peeing on the feet. Not even in Crocs.
Okay. Let's see. We got some stories. I got my trigonometry. That was really protracted. In Donut Gate. This is kind of a bummer story. I put it in my notes and I wanted to pull it out, but I'm just going to mention it. Series of shootings and stuff at Six Flags. And I just don't have the appetite to talk about it now. Maybe we'll talk about violence in theme parks later. That could be a special even.
Could be. That's not our sort of news anyway.
I think if we could
unless it's something like somebody shot a clown or it was like a clown that shot up a place.
What if,
that would be a rare encounter story.
I think we should do a violent show. Like audio violence. Not like hype, not like really, really bad. But what if it was what if we did stuff like Chuck E. Cheese fights, just the audio, you know? Or we did maybe there's some TikTok of someone getting bonked.
Chuck E. Cheese fights. Isn't that called Five Nights at Freddy's?
I saw on Patrol Live. By the way, I do watch On Patrol Live on Reels. It is a fantastic show. The Chuck E. Cheese responses are pretty awesome. They do occasionally get 911 calls from Chuck E. Cheese, and they go up to break up a fight. And they're professionals at Chuck E. Cheese. Like, they do this shit a lot. They know what's up. So compared to sometimes they go into a convenience store, they say, oh, there's a guy who, you know, he did something we don't like. And the cops are like, okay, show me the video. And nobody knows how to run the video system is usually how it goes. Right. And they say, oh, well, only yeah. the manager knows how to log in. You know, we got to wait. Okay. And it's really boring. Chuck E. Cheese, everyone, the counter boy knows how to check the video log. Do you know why? They're doing it all day.
Yeah. Right?
It's fantastic. It's like they've got all these monitors in the control room. They got a network switch set up. They're switching between different IP cams.
You know, this is another reason why I want to get into like actually being a VTuber personality.
Oh god.
Because I keep running across like all these crazy videos like like the dash cam videos or like the police body cam videos where like they're trying to deal with a bunch of Karens who like go insane and like start screaming at them and pissing themselves or like trying to pick a fight with the cops, right? It's like, I'm watching this stuff, right? And like, holy shit, these people are, how are these people real? And I want to be able to like show that off, right?
Yeah. It'd be kind of fun.
Because I mean, our show is, our live show at least is essentially like, we're like audio tubers.
God, no. I don't want to be an audio tuber.
In more ways than one.
No.
Not just like the YouTube sense, but also in the sense of potatoes.
Potatoes. You boil them, mash them.
Which reminds me. Here's another thing. This is something Christopher Battle sent me on Fetty a couple of days ago. But he sent in this video of a recently married couple who stream under the name The Traveling Tacos, and they took a visit to the Idaho Potato Museum.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah.
Digging the music.
Yeah, the music's good, but there's not that much talking in the video.
Wait, is there any cold acid? Is this a video with just music?
No, there's some talking at the beginning.
All I'm hearing is music, okay? You can't do that on an audio show! Oh, here they go.
John and I are in Blackfoot, Idaho, at Idaho's famous Potato Museum. I am really, really, really excited to be going in. This has been on my list since we decided to take our honeymoon trip to Idaho, and we pretty much rerouted our entire trip so that we could come here. It's about 5 o'clock in that evening. The museum closes at 7. We're hoping we can see everything before they close and maybe even get to try one of these famous Idaho potatoes.
Yeah, that's about all the talking that I've seen in it.
Wow, that was a thrilling encounter. Absolutely one of a kind.
Yeah, that's going to be in the show notes for anybody who wants to see their tour through the museum.
Mm.
And one day, maybe I'll go there.
Yeah, Idaho would be a good place. I was there last year briefly. Drove through it, honestly, but I think I stopped for gas. It does smell like potatoes.
I bet it does.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it smells like the black dirt there is what potatoes seem to smell like if you buy them from the... Though if they're fresh enough, they just have the scent of the dirt. It's sort of the other way around. Potatoes smell like Idaho, but I like to say it smells like potatoes.
Either way works. I mean, either way works. All right, want something? Now it's time for me to bring up something just frustrating again.
Okay.
So you heard about Sweet Baby Ink already, right? And we made a little mention of it. As I like to call it, like Stinky Bully Incorporated.
Sure.
So. This was dug up by the VTuber Rev, and like, not just by him, he found this on a tweet by GamesNosh, and this is a bit of Sweet Baby's CEO, Kim Belair, at GDC.
Diversified game projects, she feels...
Need to zip it up a little bit more.
Okay, zipping it up.
Your mod. Let's listen to this clip.
If you're a creative working in AAA, which I did for many, many years, put this stuff up to your higher-ups, and if they don't see the value in what you're asking for when you ask for consultants, when you ask for research, go have a coffee with your marketing team and just terrify them with the possibility of what's going to happen if they don't give you what you want.
So based on her many tirades over the years, as well as this clip, it's very clear the kind of tactics that woke people like Kim Belair will take. They love to weaponize concepts like empathy, diversity, and inclusion to threaten and intimidate people they want to push their agenda onto. They need these companies because without them, they don't have the mouthpiece to share the woke agenda they want to push onto other people. And just like with Gamergate, These people are pushing a grift where they convince and intimidate these companies into thinking they have to hire companies like Sweet Baby Inc. to make changes to their product. And in
yeah, so essentially, you're looking at, remember I mentioned the Mafia earlier? These guys are essentially social justice mobsters or social justice terrorists, right? It's like, hey, that's a nice looking game you got there. It'd be a shame if you didn't make it woke.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And like, and you even heard there, Kim Beller saying like, essentially, terrorize your company. Put the fear of the woke mobs in them to get what you want for like shitting things up. And you know what the end result is?
Worst games.
What the end result is?
Worst games.
Suicide Squad has less than 500 active players at any given time. And this is a game that's been out for what, a month now? Right? Like they pretty much almost every AAA title of the last year seems to have been infected by Sweet Baby. As the Steam curator group, Sweet Baby Incorporated Detective, has discovered, right? And it's like, holy shit. And it's a wonder, people wonder, like, how are these little games by no-name companies getting to be so popular and selling like hotcakes? Well, it's because they don't go with this woke agenda, and they're made by people who aren't afraid of like investors who might pull out of their company. Because keep in mind, like, where's all the big money these days coming from? They're coming from companies like BlackRock, who are pushing all this DAI and ESG shit, right? And are probably bankrolling Sweet Baby Incorporated and all its competitors to push all this shit. And if you're a big company, like bringing in billions of dollars a year, you probably have like some sizable investment from BlackRock or Vanguard or one of these other like kill capitalism by being capitalism, commie organizations.
Yeah, it's not who controls the games that controls the universe. It's who has the power to stop the games from coming out.
And
I'm trying to shoehorn a Dune thing in there.
Yeah, it's not really working too well.
Says what Paul Atreides said. Yeah, whatever. Let's see. Yeah, I have a lot to say on this topic that I'm not sure if I want to articulate every thought that I have on this podcast. But it's good to be aware that this is going on and see it in the news. I mean, we'll see the effect in games coming out soon, I'm sure. It's big enough that I noticed it, and I don't pay attention to the gamer news that much. So
I actually saw the recent, like, the guy who created that curator and related Steam group, Cabrutus, he was actually interviewed by Asmongold.
Okay.
Just recently, and I was watching that, and yeah, like, dude is like pretty fucking chill Brazilian guy, and he doesn't deserve any flack that he's getting from the commies on this. And yeah, I mean, here's the other thing with Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. Warner actually came out and said, like, with how hard it has failed financially, lesser companies would go bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Warner being Warner and having like all the rest of like their media empire to hold up any part that's struggling, right, is making it through. But with the number of people who are actually playing this like always online game, like being like less than 1,000 people, there's no way for them to, there's no way they're ever going to recoup their costs on the development and publishing of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Warner is saying, well, with this failure, we're going to go in even further on the online, always online type of games. which is also another one of the reasons why Suicide Squad is hated. It's not just because of the woke writers who fucking ruined all sorts of DC characters in it. It's because some of the other decisions made for the game's development are ones that gamers don't like. So, and that in that particular case, yeah, it's more than just Sweet Baby, but so many of these other games, like Starfield, the Saints Row reboot, Forspoken, right? Like, the sort of things they're pushing in those games for wokeness reasons, right, has been a big chunk of why those games have not been popular and they've failed.
Mm-hmm.
As Baron Spud the Mighty says in the chat, go woke, go broke.
Yeah, it's a system that doesn't make a lot of sense if you look at it from the ground level, but...
It makes sense if you're one of these grifters.
Right. It makes sense if you think about it as a, you know, there's sort of an economy going on where we have to, you know, if you can get a DEI officer into a town, right? What's that person's job? Well, their job is to go do DEI service type things, which means trying to find money in a budget to get contracts to their friends who work at in the group in the college, which gives DEI degrees, right? And so if you or promote that kind of thinking. And so that's kind of like how the money flows, is they get people indoctrinated and they go out and they get jobs at, and now, and they promote the idea that, oh, you know, every city council should have someone, have a DEI officer for every parks and rec department or whatever. And or for every company over a certain size and so on. And you get them out there and their entire purpose in life, and ignoring all of the political stuff, like what they really do is they try and find money to spend on their friends' consulting companies. And it's not, doesn't have to be literally their friends. It just has to be people in the circle. And so it's like, yeah,
it's literally a grift.
But you don't have to be aware of this to participate in it. That's the other key part. And the financier part of it, I think, is interesting because, like, if you're a BlackRock or someone of that size, and you're sitting up at the top and you get to decide who gets invested in and who doesn't, you kind of have the power to turn off the faucet to some of these companies unless they do exactly what you want. And so what I can't really solve is why having that as a control mechanism is useful for them. I guess somehow it gets them a better ROI versus if they didn't have it. It gives them some direct control over these companies that otherwise all they could do is complain about the stock price. But now they get to influence exactly what they do by making proclamations or sending fake protest groups to fake protest you, or I don't know. It's
consider that, like, BlackRock and Vanguard are if they weren't so full of money, would be what used to be known as activist investors, right? They're the ones that put in some money so they can raise a lot of shit and freak everybody else out and try and push things to go their way. Well, they've discovered with the sort of money they're slapping around, they can pull all sorts of shit to get companies to do what they want. You need to look less at the money and more at the personalities and politics of the ones running these organizations. And even then, like, the people running BlackRock and Vanguard and these others, they might not even be the ones at the top. They might be useful idiots for someone else, right? And this is something that that Asman was actually pointing out in one of his videos about Sweet Baby, is that no, Sweet Baby is not like the final boss here. Far from it. This is just one of many of these consultancy agencies pushing the woke agenda. And you knock one of them down, well, there's another 10 there that are still standing around, and somebody is pulling all of their strings, right? This is like fucking spiderweb, right?
Yeah, it seems like they're like any business, you know, they're sort of a niche filler, right? There's an opportunity and they moved in. And so the opportunity is, you know, whether it's real or it's sort of an artificially created scenario, it's like, well, so there's some people who are going to come in and shut you down. There's a real threat. The investors are
going
to pull out.
There's always going to be parasites.
There's a real or created threat, right? Someone's going to pull the money out somehow, right? And so we're here just to make sure that the money doesn't get pulled out. I bet that's their pitch, what it amounts to. And
probably, yeah, because I mean, that's the sort of pitch that grifters love the most, because it's the easiest one to pull off, right? It's like, oh yeah, you're worried about like somebody's going to pull the rug out from under you. Well, we've got these magical rug holding nails. You keep us around, we'll put these nails through the carpet, and you don't have to worry about it being pulled out from under you.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, it's just like fucking, they're just putting in finishing nails, right? And pocketing the rest in half the cases. And in some cases, they do a little bit more to show that, yeah, they are worth the money that's being thrown at them.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end run, the carpet may not be pulled out from under them, but the carpet's in much shittier shape than it was before, because these parasites have been shitting on it at the same time.
It's a very graphic description. I'm trying to have a little restraint here. Like, not everything is a protection racket. Like, sometimes there are people who go, oh, you know, it's a shame you have this business here. It'd be a shame if anything happened to
you
it, right?
The CEO of the company actually saying, to use like essentially terrorist tactics to get these things in the door. Yeah, okay, maybe it's not a protection racket. It's just straight up fucking terrorism.
Well, what he said is scare them by telling them the investors will pull out. And they don't have to be part of a protection racket to say that. They can actually just be, you know, the investors continue to pull out of stuff that isn't DEI enough.
Meanwhile, I'm thinking I should move to Hungary and start a game company there that I'll become friends with Viktor Orban and I'll never have to worry about any of this DEI ESG shit in any of the games I make.
Yeah. And I just want to finish my point. Not everything's a protection racket. So you have to be careful a little bit. Sometimes they're obviously leftist and they're obviously stuck in this ideology, but you don't have to be in a cabal. In a conspiracy to make money off
no,
of this.
But
you can
it
just
helps.
Be like, if there's a neighborhood where they're running protection rackets, you can have a security service if you want, you know?
Yeah. Keep in mind, two other people on the Sweet Baby payroll as consultants themselves to the company are none other than Zoe Quinn and Lego Butts.
Yeah.
Two very well-known names from Gamergate.
Yeah, but that doesn't prove anything. That's just what they do, right?
It shows that there's definite rotten apples there.
Well, until you have the guy who runs BlackRock involved in some way, like, I don't see how that it's anything, but that's just the things that they do, right? Their entire business is going around consulting on woke issues and telling people to be more woke. So the money doesn't get cut off.
Their whole thing is actually not just consult, but provide writers and direction for the game narrative.
Yeah, but that's not a step too far, right? That's just what consulting means in this context. Like, clearly, they're a bad influence. I'm not arguing that they're not an annoying influence on the games industry, and that they shouldn't be ridiculed. And the people who contract who think, oh, we need a more woke game for whatever reason, like that's just those are silly people, right? And there's companies that have a lot of money, and they're not serious. They're just like they'll go for anything. They're not principled, I guess I should say, not serious. But
yeah, they're definitely not principled.
Just whatever goes today, that's what we'll do. You know, we're just going to make another Avengers movie, guys. You know, but nah, I don't know. As much as I'm going to say about it.
Anyway, this is the cancer that's been killing, like, the AAA titles, been killing Hollywood killing practically all entertainment for the last decade. I'm just sick of it.
Yep. Oh well. How do you want to close this out?
I have one more thing that I want to. That's not related to this. But did you hear about? Did you hear about Yuzu and Citra?
No.
The emulators? No. Well, oh, they're dead.
Shoot. Yeah. Are those the It's not the Wii emulator, is it?
The 3DS and Switch emulators.
Okay, yeah.
Citra has been around for quite some time. Yuzu, not so much, but the same developers. The company that they created to manage all the money coming in, because they did the stupid thing and decided, hey, if you want to use our emulators, well, we want you to pay us, even though they're open source, right? They probably wouldn't have gotten into as much shit and ended up with an agreement to pay Nintendo about $2.5 million and delete everything if it wasn't for that. But yeah, all the Yuzu and Citra code has been removed from GitHub. Of course, if you know where to look, you can still find code for it, and there will be people who fork and continue it. But yeah, a big F to these projects, and a big "you're fucking retards" to the developers who wanted to grift off of them and ended up getting their projects killed for it.
Yeah, I heard about that. Oh well, I haven't used either of those things.
Sad situation. On the other hand, another Nintendo DS emulator where the devs were charging for money for it has gone free. The emulator Drastic.
Yeah.
Fallout from this. So yeah, they've decided, we're making Drastic free now. So that, please don't come after us next, Nintendo.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Great.
But yeah, this is kind of like pain for not just, of course there's the piracy issues, but there's also the whole issue around like games preservation, and especially now with like it's all fucking downloads and stuff, right? Well, you need to defeat the copy protection these days to make sure that in the future those games are still playable and can be properly preserved, right? Mm. And this is just hurting that sort of thing.
Yeah. I don't know what you do. I guess you save the console if they don't allow
development. Yeah, but even then chips die, capacitors pop or leak, etc., right? You can't rely on the hardware lasting forever, which is why emulation is a thing, right?
Yeah.
But if you can't reverse engineer and create emulators for these platforms, you can't preserve what runs on those platforms.
And these companies, not just singling out Nintendo, but a lot of them, I guess Sony too, they benefit from the existence of emulators, sometimes indirectly, because when they go and want to have a product in the latest generation console that maybe plays a classic game, they have to re-implement an emulator. And even if they don't, I'm not saying that they fork an emulator that already exists, but because these projects are out there, there's people who are gaining experience in hardware emulation for video games, and they know it's important, and the level of knowledge around it grows, and they benefit from that because now they can hire a guy or a consulting firm or someone to work on the emulator for their thing, right?
Sega actually paid for emulators so that they could release games from their older consoles,
right,
on PC. Like, if I'm not mistaken, like the Sega Genesis Classics Collection is actually built around a like emulator from the community that they paid a license for. Right? So it's like, you know, some of these companies know that, yeah, these aren't necessarily bad things to have exist. They might. Now, there's of course, an issue when people are making emulators for the current gen devices, right? Because there's like a bit more of a gray area when the devices are still being sold, games are still being made for it, right? But for older generations, like for like the Nintendo DS, like why'd they have to take Citra down as well when that's totally open source? And there's like other people working on it, right? It's for a device they haven't sold in like over a decade.
Mm.
Yeah. There are no, like, this is one of those stories where there's no good guys.
Yeah.
And anybody who is like not a bad guy, but somehow involved is getting punished because other people are bad. It's a shitty situation.
Yeah. Oh man. Well, you want to wrap this up, or I'm gonna table my last story here. I think we can.
Okay.
We're gonna have to. I'm gonna table everything. I'm not gonna do any other segments. Just gotta get going. It's.
Yeah, we're running late.
Yep, we started late, and so we ended late to make up for it.
How surprising.
Yeah. Well, until next time, I've been Abel Kirby.
I've been Cold Acid.
Stay fruity, boys.
Adios.
I had a good woman, but she lay down, honey, and died. Oh, I had a good woman, but she lay down and died. Don't you know everybody tell me she wasn't satisfied?